Oh, man. This is, where's Kearns when I need him? All right. Okay, so what we'll do now, quick little look at the scoreboard. We don't have a lot of scores in tonight, and it's raining here on Cape Ann. Let's see. In field hockey, a couple of finals, Ipswich and Methuen, 0-0, or nil-nil, as Coach Kearns would say. Ipswich and Methuen, scoreless, final score. North Andover, 3, Essex Tech, 1. That's in field hockey. And then we have one score each from boys' soccer and girls' soccer. In boys' soccer, Newburyport over Essex Tech, 1-0. And in girls' soccer, it was Hamilton Wenham, 5, and Amesbury, 0. Those are the only scores that we have in so far. So over the weekend, it was a big, big day for Linfield, of course, as they beat Amesbury in Battle of the Unbeatens. And Newburyport ended up with a good win. So Linfield, the only unbeaten team left now in the Cal. They are at 5-0. And Amesbury is at 4-1. And if Linfield wins out in the they've got some tough games left. There's still a few to go, but we're more than halfway through the season. I think there are, let me just check the schedule here. Let's see. Linfield is home against North Attleboro Friday at 6:30. And then there are just two regular season games after that besides, well, that's it. There's Hamilton Wenham on the 28th, and that is an away game for Linfield. And then the Pioneers return home for a game against North Reading, and that'll be a big one, of course. North Reading, I believe, with one loss so far, and that will be the final home game. So there's just three regular season games left, if you can believe that. And then it's on to the state tournament. I have not looked at the power rankings yet. They are out, and we will have them up on the website for all sports. And we'll try to keep up with that and get some more interviews, as we said, with other coaches as well as what we're doing with football. So again, the North Shore Sports Writers generally drop on Tuesday mornings with Bill Newell hosting Phil Stacey, the executive sports director of the Salem News, along with Matt Williams, who's the assistant sports director, assistant executive sports editor, it's easy for me to say, and Nick Giannino, also of the Salem News. So that will be tomorrow, and lots of news coverage as well. By the way, if you haven't checked out North Shore Today, please do. It's Bill Newell's daily news magazine. It's a daily North Shore news magazine, news and sports, information from communities all over the North Shore, photographs, videos on occasion, and of course we have our newscast right at the top. We do our daily newscast, which it generally runs from 6 to 8 to 10 minutes maybe, and the North Shore Today magazine is something that there's something there for everybody. So check it out, and we add to it during the day as well. All right, so next up, enough of me. I got to see if we can get Steve Krause talking here, and if Coach LaMusta checks in with us later, we'll have that as well. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and we will be back.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, executive sports writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, I don't know who I told what. Steve Krause is on the line. I just tried to get a hold of Pat LaMusta, Steve, Linfield coach, and I couldn't get a hold of him, so I've sort of been vamping and talking stepping all over my mouth there.
To channel my inner Jay Giles, LaMusta got lost.
Ah, there you go. Oh, that's terrible.
It's not terrible.
It was. Come on, geez, LaMusta got lost.
The puns are supposed to be terrible.
Okay, that's true. I'm sure he's never heard that before, right?
I'm sure he has.
Hey, Steve, I saw you're back in the game here. You covered the Marblehead game, Marblehead Beverly, over the weekend.
Yes, I did.
Well, what were your thoughts on that game? What, you know, as you come away with it now, how do you look back on it?
Well, I'll tell you. I was told going in that Marblehead and Beverly were like the two bottom teams in the Northeastern Conference. I wouldn't know because I hadn't seen either one of them play before Saturday, but I thought Marblehead looked good against Beverly, and Beverly, despite the fact that they're 0-6, they played a decent game. They moved the ball. They just couldn't finish. And the worst thing about it was that they, a couple of those, couldn't finishes ended up being interceptions, that where Marblehead, got the ball back and then went right down the field and scored. It was a weird game, but you know what? It was, you've been there enough so that you can back me up on this. There is nothing like a beautiful spring day. I mean, a fall day. That hurts.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
This is gorgeous.
Yeah, and especially when you've got foliage there behind the visitor stands. I guess they're the only stands now. It is really something. It's a beautiful grass field, and it's a great place to watch a game. And Beverly still, they're struggling in terms of wins, but Coach, Coach Hutton and the kids don't get down. They're a young team, I understand, and Marblehead has played a hellacious schedule. Marblehead right now, they're 2-0 in the league, so, you know.
Now, first was Redlaw said to me when I went up to talk to him after the game, well, you got to see the two worst teams in the Northeastern Conference.
I don't know, yeah.
But I said, Jim's like that. Jim is more prone to see the negative sometimes.
I call it self-effacing usually when I hear his stuff.
Yeah, he's not the only coach who's like that. There are a lot of them who are like that. You know, they can't be satisfied. You know, they have to find something wrong, and just to justify their existence. I'm sure that Miller Huggins had a bunch of things that he found wrong with the 1927 Yankees. You know.
Okay.
Nature of the beast.
Yeah, I know. I guess it's a coaching technique too that some people have. I enjoy Jim's stories, and I enjoy talking with all the coaches. You know, it's funny, Steve. At this late stage of my life, I love learning from these guys. I mean, I always thought when I went into broadcasting so many years ago with Bill over WESX, I thought I knew a lot about sports. And the longer I do this, the more I realize, man, you don't know nothing. And listening to high school coaches, I'm telling you, I learn a lot almost every single time I talk with them.
You know, you say that about football. I say that about basketball. You know, so when I was at the Ivan, I enjoyed basketball season better than I enjoyed any other season.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like a warm gym on a cold night. But I enjoyed going, and I enjoyed talking to the coaches, who a lot of them got really expansive after games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like Tommy Donovan and Beverly was great for that. And there were a few others that, you know, the old school variety, you know, that when you talk to them after a game, you know, after the formal part of the interview is over, you sit around and just talk strategy and why did we do this or that. Tommy Grasso was another one.
Yes,
Tommy
yes.
Grasso was great for giving you some insights about why things are what they are. You know, and I enjoyed that a lot. I used to assign myself to a lot of Beverly games when Tommy Donovan was the coach over there. And I assigned myself to as many classical games as I could. With Tommy Grasso. Now that Marvin Avery's over there, I would love to be able to go to a lot of his games because he's kind of the same way. He's just a little bit more fiery about it, but he'll tell you what's going on.
Well, you know, that's
I miss that, you know?
Yeah.
I miss that.
That's one of the things I appreciate is exactly what you're talking about, because I tell people I get a lot of information off the record that I can't and won't use, but it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, Tommy would tell me all about some of the difficult home lives.
Yep.
And some of the kids had, and you know, how that often translated into how they played.
Yeah, there's
You know, it was just, it was a fascinating, job sometimes, Rick, you know?
Absolutely.
It was really, really good for that, you know, and, because you only see one side of it when you're in the stands. The kid makes a mistake, he fumbles the ball, or throws a big pass out of bounds or something like that, and you're going, ah.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the game, you might hear something about the kid that kind of fills in the blanks.
Yeah.
And I found the coaches, most of them, were really, really good about having their kids' backs.
Yeah.
You know, and which is something that I always kind of thought, in the grand scheme of things, was just as important as what went on out on the court.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. I covered a game a couple of years ago in Marblehead, a football game. Danvers was playing there, and it was a kid who was a well-known athlete for Danvers, very highly rated and highly touted and so on, and he exhibited some really questionable behavior, I would say, on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really overt, but kind of questionable. And then when I talked with Coach Nolan, he told me about the kid, and good Lord. And the kid seemed to have swagger and seemed to be kind of a jerk. Well, I interviewed him at school one day, and I'm telling you, you couldn't meet a nicer kid, polite, articulate, and knowing the background that I know, it's like people in the stands were just dissing this kid, you know, because, and he was reprimanded by the coach or the referee or whatever the thing was. But you know how, like you say, you have this feeling as when you're in the stands, you know more what's going on than the coaches do because it's your team or your kid.
Well, in my case, I played football. I knew those kids. I knew them, but I knew what those kids were like.
Mm-hmm.
I knew those kinds of kids.
Yeah.
And, most of the time, when you sit next to somebody in a locker room for 4 years, you know, and you get a better idea as to,
of course,
what they're like and why they're the way they are, and you see the good side of them, and you feel bad for them when they mess up,
yeah,
just like they feel bad for you when you mess up, and it's a part of my life that I. You know, like I've told a lot of people over the years, I never got rich doing it. None of us did, you know. But I wouldn't give it back for anything. I learned more about people
mm-hmm.
from that job and from the coaches and even the parents. Even the parents now. I just learned more about people than I think I would have learned anywhere else.
That's a good point.
You're always out. You're always with people, you know, you see different kinds of people. You know, if you're covering politics, all you're really dealing with is politicians. You know,
yeah.
But there's such a wide variety of people in sports that, well, you learn some pretty good lessons.
Well, the other thing I like about it, Steve, is that it brings so many people together. You know, when you start talking sports, it takes the entire geographic region and makes it feel like it's a backyard. Because you can go to Winthrop or Gloucester, and there's something in common, whether it's hockey, football, or whatever, that parents and kids can get into. And the other thing, Steve, over the years that I think you'll find is true, is we get to see these kids grow up. And as, you know, they're crosstown rivals, they now are probably buddies, or they can talk up the game, and they reminisce, and then their kids end up playing sometimes. So it's a continuum.
I find classical English, they all know each other before they get into high school because of all the youth sports in Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll just give you Swampscott Marblehead as an example. You know, the minute those kids graduate and they don't have to, you know, put on that rivalry face, you know, they all know each other by the time they're seniors. And a lot of them end up being very, very good friends.
Yep.
And, you know, it just, I've never seen anything that promotes that better than sports
in
high school. And that's one of the reasons why I hope some genius never, never decides to drop it, you know.
Yeah. Well,
budgetary purposes.
Strange.
Without a fight.
Strange times. Strange times. I wish we had more time. I got to get a hold of Pat LaMusta. I think that was him who was just coming. But listen, Steve, I miss your columns. Are you writing them anywhere where I can find them?
Put away, and, you know, I had eye problems. And I wrote one last week. I don't know if you saw it. But I'm going to sit down and try to write one tonight, too. So
good, good. Those are really well done, and I like some of the comments you get too from people. Those are pretty interesting for the most part.
No, people are interesting.
Uh-huh.
Especially the ones that disagree with you.
Oh yeah. All right. Well, I'm gonna save Patriots talk and that kind of stuff for next week. Hopefully when Kearns is here.
Okay. It was good to talk about this. I enjoyed it.
I appreciate it, because it's fun talking with you, reminiscing about this stuff, and there's a lesson there. And I think the other thing too, Steve, is that you know how you mentioned a certain style of coaching. Most of the sports writers I know all of the sports writers I know, with one exception years and years ago, once they learn that they're writing about kids and they get into it, they're always positive. It's always a positive outlook, and I think that's just so important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, there's a different. Different group of people you're writing about. These kids, they don't do this, they don't get paid, they do it because they love it, or they want to be with their friends. And, you know, you gotta take your hat off to them no matter what. And I always thought that was the only way to go, you know. You have to say what you have to say, but in the course of an article, if there was a way that I could say something nice about the kid too, I always did.
Yeah.
Because, nobody wants the glaring mistake from the, you know, and it was never, Rick Moore's fumble
for
us to prep to lose the game,
yep.
You know? It was always, you know, made sure that the coach said that, he didn't lose the game, we did, or something along those lines to make the kid feel better.
Well, a long time ago when I first started, Doc Enos told me, he was writing an article, and Doc could swear and yell at the kids in the booth, but you never saw that in an article. And he told me, one time he was writing a story about a high school baseball game, and the kid made an error, you know, that ended the game. It was the most glaring part of the game. And he said, what I do is I write, well, an error ended the game, a bad play, a misfortune, whatever. And he never mentioned the kid's name. He said, can you imagine that kid now, he's 15 years old, and 15 years from now he sees someone bring up that article to him, you know, that you lost the game. I mean, it's just not that important.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had a similar experience with a woman who, when she was a senior in high school, she let one go through her legs in a state championship softball game.
Yep, yep.
And her team ended up losing. And, you know, I wrote, I had to write, you know, that her error led to the winning run, but I also said in the story that they never would have gotten that far without her.
Right, right, exactly.
So that's what you do.
Yep, yep. I love it, man.
All right, Rick.
Okay, Steve, love child. Check in with you next week if you don't mind.
No problem.
All right. Be well and keep those columns coming. They're awesome.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Steve Krause, who was he's back at the item writing. He's retired, but he's still writing sports. He was a sports editor and a news editor. All right. I'm going to try to get a hold of Coach LaMusta live right now, so bear with me. All right. Here we go.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, Pat.
How are you?
I'm well. We're live right now. Just me in the studio here, but this is North Shore Sports Night. You've been on before. And Pat LaMusta now is our guest. He's Linfield High School coach. And, Coach, looking at the write-up by Kyle on the game, a big game, a really typical championship-type high school game between you and Amesbury. At least that's what it looks like on paper.
It was an intense game, lots of hard hits, just physical on both sides, some great offensive plays by both teams. We were lucky we had a few more big explosive plays that kind of gave us the lead early, and we were able to maintain it. So.
I'm gonna I'll be connecting to the story for Kyle's story on our post, so we don't need to go over the whole game. But I do have to ask you about maybe some of your best players or something that they did during the game. And you know, I always ask you, Pat, about the line. But you know, who are some of the guys who come right to mind as really having an excellent game on the weekend?
I think Tyler Adamo had a tough first play. You know, interception on the first play, and then, you know, he was able to bounce back and had a heck of a game the rest of the game. Two touchdown passes to Joey Cuccinello, and then one rushing touchdown. So he was able to bounce back from that, which was cool. Mm-hmm. And then he just continues to be a great leader on our team. And then Kyle Schmitz on defense, I think he ended up with like over 10 tackles, playing safety. He's not one of the bigger guys on the team, but he plays so fast, and he's a physical kid. And we're fortunate to have him as like a run stopping safety.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Pat, when
and obviously the D line and the O line played awesome. You have to against Amesbury. They're always strong up front. So, you know, we had about 6 to 8 guys that we were rotating in on D line, and then the offensive line did a great job allowing Tyler to get some room to throw some footballs.
Being able to rotate kids, is there a tendency to wear the other teams down maybe in the second half?
Yeah, I think we've been fortunate to have some depth on the D-line and even in the defensive backfield to kind of, you know, to have some guys that just play one way and rotate in, so we're able to, you know, play with some fresh legs in the fourth quarter.
When a kid makes a play, Pat, that he's out there on an island all by himself, like an interception or a fumble or something like that. What's the general coaching style or the coaching lesson that coaches do? Because I know we read about, you know, you read about at the pro level, Belichick just sits the guy down. You can't do that in high school.
Yeah, I think it, and I've said it to you before, I think, like, we're talking about a bad play, right?
Yeah. Like you said, your quarterback came back, you know, from an opening play, you know, and he just bounced back. And he's been taught well. He's got a right attitude, and that's coaching.
I think I went to tell him next play, you're going to be fine. And he was like, next play. He like beat me to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so he was ready to you know, short memory. but I think some players, I think it's harder, but I think Tyler's really matured. And he knows, like, as the leader of the offense, he can't hang his head.
Excellent. All right. Okay, Coach, heading toward the home stretch of the season already, or at least the regular season. However, you have a non-league game coming up with North Attleboro. What's the strategy this week with your team in terms of practices and so on? And then maybe if you know anything about North Attleboro, you can pass that along to us.
So they're big. They have some athletes. They run two tight ends, which is not something, I mean, we see it with Amesbury, but you don't see it that much when you look across the whole Cal, and they run the I formation. So they're going to be a downhill team. So I think there's things from the Amesbury game we can carry over, but they're going to be tough. They got some speed, like I said, and I think on the offensive end, we just need to continue to get better at what we do and not try to draw up crazy things in the sand and just get better at what we do and get the balls out there to the athletes in space, wherever the space is. And then on defense, it's going to be trying to, like, counter their big offensive line, getting creative where we can, but trying to match their size up front with some speed and pursuit.
All right, this is a home game for you guys, and it's at 6:30 on Friday, right?
It's 6:30 Friday in Linfield.
In Linfield, yep, okay. Hey, Pat, I know, sounds like you're kind of a little horsey there from working out with the kids and practice and stuff, but I appreciate your taking the time. Congratulations on just a fabulous start so far.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Coach, talk to you later. Take care. Right, that's Pat LaMusta, who was the Linfield High School football coach. LaMusta got lost, Steve Cross. Linfield now at 5-0. It says 6-0 in front of me, but I'm pretty sure it's 5-0. And anyway, they're unbeaten. Amesbury with one loss. Newburyport with one loss in the league. And I'm not sure about North Reading. They may have just one loss as well. So it's a race in the Cal. Nope, North Reading has two. But right now, Linfield is in the driver's seat. Okay, quick break. We'll come back with Mike Grenier. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. So be back in a minute. There we go.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with sports writer Mike Grenier. Mike, how are you doing?
We're doing fine. What happened to our man Tim Kearns tonight?
He's on assignment.
Okay.
He's on assignment. He's taking some time off, and having a little time off with his bride So they're, I think he's back next week because he's away for 2 weeks and he was away last week as well, but so were we. So how was your holiday, last week?
It was good. I mean, we're back in the swing of things though now. Obviously we had the Patriots at rock bottom. We have my Notre Dame football team still in the top 20, and we have the Celtics almost ready to go.
Boy, I've been watching some college football, and there's been some great games. My alma mater, well, it's not my alma mater, but it's I almost went to Texas. All my buddies went to Texas, and they're having a good year, but they got knocked off the last second by Oklahoma. That was a killer.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one.
Oh, that was a killer. Great game, though. Jeez.
Yeah.
It was a beauty. Let me see here now. We're not going to talk about the Celtics, the Bruins, because there's not much to... Let me say that again. The Patriots, because there's not much to talk about. Bruins,
right,
off to a good start. Now, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. You have... Well, first of all, I want to... The last time we talked, the Celtics had just gotten Drew Holiday.
Correct.
And they made a couple of other moves around that as well. So let's get the skinny. What's up?
Well, I thought we could talk, obviously when the season begins, Rick, and we're going to be going back and forth on Monday nights about the various stars on each team, the Celtics and the Bucks in particular, because it looks like it's going to be a two-team race, although we can't sleep on the Miami Heat. As long as Eric Spoelstra is the coach, I feel like they're going to be in the running,
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the rosters, I think the Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks have the best rosters, but the team that plays, that has the best chemistry, is the defending champion, Denver Nuggets. Now, the Celtics or the Bucks, obviously, wouldn't have to worry about them until, mid-June or early June, should they reach the NBA Finals. So, we could put aside the Denver Nuggets for a while, but let's talk about the Celtics and the Bucks, and which team really has improved the most in the off-season. Now, the Bucks obviously acquired Damian Lillard, who finally played in the preseason game last night and scored like 14 points, but he didn't shoot particularly well. But everyone in Milwaukee and around the NBA is excited about Damian Lillard, you know, a perennial all-star, a great player. He's 33 years old, and he's going to add a lot to the Milwaukee Bucks. But the Celtics, on the other hand, added Jrue Holiday, who, of course, won a championship with the Milwaukee Bucks 2 or 3 years ago. Still has the legs, still has the firepower, still is a phenomenal defensive player for his age, 32, and you add him to the Celtics lineup. So, you know, what I would like to talk about tonight, since we'll be talking about those style players, is what does each team have backing up those great players, okay?
Yep.
So let's start with the hometown Celtics, okay? So, you know, obviously, and this is where it gets interesting, Rick, because, and we can talk about this, you and I, because the projected Celtics starting lineup has, you know, Jason Tatum, of course, Jaylen Brown, the newly acquired Kristaps Porzingis, who averaged 23 points a game last season, and then you have Jrue Holiday, of course, at the point. And then you have your option right here. This is where Coach Joe Mazzulla has the option of starting Al Horford or Derek White. So the way I look at that is that Al Horford is, I mean, a lot of people want Al Horford in the starting lineup. That's great, but he is 37 years old. And the Celtics do need size in their lineup. Porzingis is really the only big guy in that projected starting lineup. So do you start Al Horford, who's 37 years old, or do you start Derek White? Well, I think Mazzulla has the option there, depending on what type of team the opponent is. If it's a big team, whether it's the Knicks or whoever, then you could start Al Horford if they need height. But if they can sit Horford down, bring him off the bench, then you have Derek White starting along with Jrue Holiday in the backcourt. And to me, that's a great starting lineup, a great backcourt when you have Derek White and Jrue Holiday, because both of them are exceptional defenders, both of them can score, both of them have experience, and they can facilitate the ball to the big scorers, Tatum and Brown and Porzingis. So I really love that six-man kind of almost like a six-man starter. Mm-hmm. In other words, meaning like either Horford or Derek White. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I really like that. So, you know, I mean, what do you think of that, Rick? You know?
I'm wondering, Mike, if that will be dictated by the opponent.
I think it will be.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will be. I think, let's say, the Celtics are presented an opponent that has a lot of height, then I think you go with Horford. If the opponent doesn't have a lot of height, then I think you go with Derek White. And I really, really think this is the year where Mazzulla has to be careful about Al Horford and playing him too many minutes, because he is 37 years old, and if they're going to make if they're going to play like 100 games, including the playoffs, or 105 games, then you want Horford fresh in late May and June. That means, ideally, you want to bring him off the bench most of the time, okay?
Well, did you see where the NBA is putting an edict out about resting players when they shouldn't be resting, that type of thing? Well, so what's your take on that?
My take on that, I think that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. I think teams are going to try to, unless it's really like a applicable punishment for teams that don't do it, I think teams will somehow skirt that issue. They'll try to still rest their big-name players on certain nights. But I think the idea is very good. How it's implemented will be the key.
See, the thing is, you know, in terms of fair play, sportsmanship, et cetera, et cetera, you know, you're paid, I said this before, you're paid a ridiculous amount of money to play in a league where that's all you do is keep in shape. That's all you have to do. And the travel, I mean, is luxurious. You're treated like a king, and your work schedule is 82 days. Okay,
right.
And so, to me, for the level the playing field for the people who are paying to bring their families to a game. You know, Kyrie can't say, "Oh, I need a break." You know, you can't injury. Sure, fine, but I don't want these fake injuries. Damn it, play the 82 games. And you know what? Whoever's left standing at whatever team is left standing at the end of that period, okay, then they're the best. But I don't like the idea of resting people for the sake.
Oh no, me neither. I think that's why Adam Silver, he recognized that. I mean, obviously there must have been a lot of complaints to the league office about fans paying. Really, when you're talking the playoffs, you're talking $500, $600, $700 per ticket.
Yep.
When you get to the finals, so in the playoffs, you know, you just want even the regular season, if one team's coming through town, let's say the Denver Nuggets coming through town just once a year in the Eastern Conference, you want to see Jokic play. You want to see Murray play. You want to see the key players from that championship team play. If they're resting Jokic, which he's not the type of player, by the way, who will ask out. He's a tremendous team guy. And if you're paying $250 for a regular season ticket, you want to see the opposing team's best players.
Yes.
As well as your home team's best players.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think the idea of not resting players is a terrific idea. I hope it's implemented somehow.
Yeah, okay. I obviously, you know, you take a look, just off topic for 1 second, you take a look at the Bruins last year, and, you know, should Patrice Bergeron have played in that Montreal finale? No, in retrospect. He got hurt, you know, and he didn't need to do that. So that, I understand picking and choosing a game here and a game there. We all need a mental health day no matter what business you're in. But sitting four or five players down and sitting, you know, you're, oh, my star needs to rest. Okay. All right. Enough said about that. Back to the bench.
Back to the bench. We're starting with the Celtics bench. And I said, obviously now, so that means either Derek White or Al Horford come off the bench. Like basically a sixth man, kind of the Brogdon role from last year, although they're not similar players. They're not point guards. However, you're going to have either Derek White or Horford coming off the bench. That's a tremendous way to start the rotation off the bench for Joe Mazzulla,
mm-hmm.
coach.
Agreed.
After that, to me, when it looks like Peyton Pritchard all of a sudden has elevated himself and his game into a really strong rotation role.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen in the three preseason games, he's averaging 21 points a game. He's shooting like lights out. He's hitting three-pointers all over the place. And Brad Stevens showed tremendous confidence in him by signing him to a four-year, $30 million deal. Mm-hmm. So they're obviously committing to Peyton Pritchard as a guy who will give him a big contribution off the bench, and he's very capable of doing that, Rick. We've seen that off and on his first three or four years. He's a very capable shooter. He's a smart player. He can distribute the ball. Obviously, he's small. He's on the small side, so you have to sort of masquerade him a little bit or mask him. On defense, you know, he's not the best defensive player because he's so small, but he makes the effort,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to get his minutes. There's no way he's not going to get his minutes. He's going to get his minutes this year coming off the bench. So if you're talking Horford or Derek White off the bench, plus Peyton Pritchard, and then the third guy, I think, in the rotation off the bench would be Sam Hauser,
mm-hmm.
who, of course, is an exceptional three-point shooter. I think with Mazzulla being a rookie coach, head coach last year, really didn't get the opportunity. Sam Hauser did not get the opportunity that I felt, or many people felt, he deserved because he's a rhythm shooter. He's a in the groove shooter. And I think he needs minutes to, if he misses the first two or three shots, so what? He could hit the next three or four and you know, push a Celtics lead from 6 points to 15 in a hurry because we know he's a heck of a three-point shooter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's three good guys off the bench right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to mention a guy, Rick, that I saw him play for the Celtics the other night against the 76ers, a guy who might make the team, and not only that, might be in the rotation. He's from the Ukraine, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's 6'7", and his name is hard to pronounce. Spy Mikhailuk.
Okay? Okay.
He's averaging 15 points a game mm-hmm. in the preseason, the two games he's played. He looked so smooth and comfortable against the 76ers starters the other night. Scored 15, 16 points. He was like 6'7" from the floor. He's 6'7" tall, by the way. He's like 6'7" from the floor. And he had his previous game, he had 15, 16 points. He looks really smooth and comfortable coming off the bench and blending right in with whoever the Celtics have on the floor. And I think Mazzulla and the coaching staff have to be really intrigued with this guy. He's 26 years old. Last year, playing with two or three different teams, the Knicks and Charlotte, he shot 44% from the floor, and he shot 42% from three-point territory. Now, that gets my attention. When a guy can shoot over 40% from the floor on three-pointers, that has to get your attention, okay? So I think he could be like the ninth guy, in
mm-hmm.
other words, you know, the second unit guy who's going to come in and give you some three-pointers similar to Hauser, but this kid can also take it to the floor and get layups and little floaters and that kind of shot, okay,
mm-hmm.
the type of shot that Brogdon hit a year ago, all
mm-hmm.
right? And then, you know, also, and then I think you have to add to the rotation Luke Kornet. Just even if he plays 5-6 minutes per half, he's like a 7-footer. We know he can block a couple of shots. We know he can get you rebounds.
Oh, the Kornet contest.
Right? Exactly. He contests those. He's under the basket sometimes and jumps up and blocks the vision of the guy who might be taking a three-pointer from the corner.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've noticed in the preseason here, Rick, it's sort of a copycat league. As you know, I've noticed other players starting to do that on opposing teams. So, now we know he's not a gifted, you know, he's not a very athletic player, but he can give you 5 or 6 minutes per half off the bench where he gets you a couple of rebounds, a couple of baskets, and he's just a nice presence on the floor, and he also would give a break to Porzingis as a big man or Al Horford if Al Horford happens to start. So I think their rotation is potentially really, really good. All right? So that's what the Celtics present. I mean, I think they have the best starting five in the NBA, and then if you have two or three of those guys off the bench contributing, you have yourself quite a team. Now, we have to talk about the Celtics' main competitor in that Eastern Conference, and that's got to be the Bucks, of course. When you look at their starting lineup, the projected starting lineup that I've seen in every internet service and my own thoughts on watching the Bucks, I watched them play a couple preseason games already. Their projected starting lineup, obviously, is Damian Lillard, Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's a potential MVP, and you have Brook Lopez, who's 35 years old, but who made All-NBA defense first team a year ago. And you have Chris Middleton, who's also getting up there in age, but still averages 23-24. And lo and behold, Pat Connaughton of St. John's Prep is on many sites projected as a starter with the four great players that they have, okay? Even if he doesn't start, he'll come off the bench as a sixth man. Now, last night, I watched the Milwaukee Bucks play the Lakers in L.A., and Connaughton was a competitive game. They led the Lakers by 5 or 6 points with a minute and a half left. By 9 or 10 points. The Lakers cut it to 5, and they were really bidding to win the game. The Lakers were.
Mm-hmm.
And Connaughton was out on the floor, and first he intercepted a pass with like a minute left. Then he hit the 3-pointer 10 seconds later to put the Bucks up by 9 with like 45 seconds left. Game over. He's got that kind of experience now. He's going into his 9th season. His 6th season with the Bucks, and he knows all about the Bucks system. So therefore, he's a projected starter. If at the very worst, he'll be the 6th man.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a great starting lineup, and then you have whether it's Connaughton starts or off the bench, he's going to be a key rotation guy. And then what the Bucks have added though for reserves, I'm kind of impressed, Rick. Though, I mean, the Celtics have a potentially very good second unit. The Bucks have added Robin Lopez, who is twin brother to Brook Lopez, who's been around the league for 12, 13, 14 years. He's also a 7-footer who can block shots and hit little jumpers. He's got his own bag of tricks from 12 or 13 years in the NBA. So he's going to be a key piece off the bench. They have Cameron Payne, who I remember very well from the Phoenix Suns 2-3 years ago, left-handed shooter, can hit the three. He can give you 15, 18 points off the bench. You have a name you'll recognize, Rick, Jay Crowder, former Celtic. He's also a key guy who could actually start or come off the bench, okay? And then they really like this young guy, Marjon Beauchamp, who played quite a few minutes last season, towards the end of the season and in the playoffs. They really like him. And, of course, Bobby Portis, who could start for just about any team in the NBA, kind of was contending with Brogdon last year for sixth man of the year. He's back with the Bucks, and he's a legitimate 20 points per game man coming off the bench even, 18, 16, 18 points, anywhere in there. So on paper, they might even have a better second unit than the Celtics, but the drawback for the Bucks is that they're an aging team. Lopez is in his 30s. Jay Crowder is in his 30s. Cameron Payne's been around. Bobby Portis has been around. So they're a bit older, a little bit longer in the tooth, so as you know, with all the players in the NBA in particular, it's a tough physical league. They tend to break down with injuries as you get older.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my question mark about the Bucks.
Well, wow, great analysis, man. That's awesome stuff. And I was just thinking, if you took the Bucks second five and the Celtics second five and put them out there and played a game, who would win? But it doesn't work that way, because what I'm thinking is, What I'm thinking is, it's the chemistry of the players off the bench working with the starters. That's what counts.
That's correct. That's correct. And the other factor, Rick, similar to the Celtics having Joe Mazzulla taking over last year, literally the day before the season began, and of course, you know, basically I thought he was obviously outcoached by Eric Spoelstra in the Eastern Conference Finals, all right? But the Bucks have Adrian Griffin, who's 49 years old, has never had a head coaching job in the NBA, but he's been around as an assistant for 10, 11, 12 years, and he takes over as the head coach of the Bucks with no previous head coaching experience. So that could, that might work actually against the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the year they won it all, the Bucks 3 years ago, they had, Mike Budenholzer, who was fired after last season, okay? So therefore, the Bucks are working from a new standpoint in terms of head coaching experience. So that could play a role, a huge role, in how the season turns out for the Bucks. A guy who's inexperienced as a head coach with a veteran team, and let's see how the players play for him, how they react to him, and what kind of moves. It's a lot different in when you're moving the chess pieces and you're responsible for the big games in the playoffs and all that. Now, Adrian Griffin, to his credit, when the Toronto Raptors won it all with Kawhi Leonard a few years ago, he was instrumental as an assistant coach, okay? But, like I said, it's a lot different when you're the head coach. The pressure is a whole lot larger when you're the head coach. So that's going to be another factor for the Milwaukee Bucks. How will the new coach, what kind of performance will he get from those top-notch players?
But what's the over-under for how many timeouts Mazzulla is going to call in the fourth quarter?
You know, he has to, you know, the beauty of it, obviously, I didn't like the job Mazzulla did. I don't like the job he did last year. However, with Sam Cassell there, who has a lot of NBA coaching experience, and with Charles Lee, who has a lot of veteran coaching experience in the NBA, on that staff, they do have a different perspective, a different outlook in terms of contributions to the head coaching. And Mazzulla, you have to hope that he has learned from his mistakes, and he's not too cocky when he takes his team to the floor for an 82-game season. Mm-hmm. And so I just think it's going to be a phenomenal regular season with those two teams in particular.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll tell you what. So then next time we get together, which hopefully will be next Monday, maybe you could take a broader view, pull out a little bit, you know, instead of the dropping in on the Celtics and the Bucks, maybe pull up to a little higher altitude and look at the rest of the Celtics conference and tell us who might be a threat, you know, because when's the season start? It starts this week or next week?
Next week, exactly. But yeah, about 10 days from now.
Okay.
All
right. So maybe give us sort of a broader view from your perspective.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love it.
It's going to be fun, though, I think. I think both these teams could be super teams, the Celtics and the Bucks. And I think, you know, you can't sleep on Miami, like I said. The Knicks are going to be competitive. Tom Thibodeau does a heck of a job as a head coach. So you got, you know, it's going to be, again, as usual, interesting. The Celtics' window of opportunity is still there as long as they have a young Jaylen Brown, a young Jason Tatum, now in the prime of their careers.
All right. Okay. Great stuff, Mike. I appreciate it, and we'll see you next Monday.
That sounds great, Rick, and have a great week.
You too. Stay well, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. That's Mike Grenier, sports journalist and our basketball insider. So on behalf of Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, Bill Newell, I'm Rick Moore. Thank you for being with us. Be well, be safe, and do the right thing.